Everyone has heard of postpartum depression and maybe even postpartum anxiety, but postpartum rage is a symptom that can be a component of either of those or a standalone experience that doesn't get enough attention. In this episode, I interviewed Dr. Alice Pickering, perinatal mental health clinical psychologist, all about postpartum rage. We discuss what it is, how it presents, factors that can contribute to it from a mental, emotional, as well as physiological perspective, as well as the management ideas for treatment. Both Dr. Alice and I also share our own personal experiences with postpartum rage, and our goal here is to help shed some light on one of the shadow sides of motherhood, to normalize the experience and help provide some ways that you can get some help. Here we go.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
The metabolic needs of pregnancy, postpartum healing, and making breast milk require more minerals than in other times of your life, and staying truly deeply hydrated during these times is very important. Nowadays, there are more options for this than ever, and ingredient quality and manufacturing integrity is very important for Dr. Leah and I. That's why we love Redmond Relight electrolyte powders. Mined in the USA, Relight contains Redmond's ancient unrefined sea salt with 60 plus trace minerals in addition to the appropriate proportions and forms of calcium, potassium, chloride, and magnesium that pregnant and breastfeeding moms need. Pregnancy demands a huge increase in blood volume and synthesis of an entire new baby, and that requires, you guessed it, minerals. This is the perfect blend to be sipping on during your labor or to have mixed into your bedside water bottle during breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, strawberry lemonade, or lemon lime. Grab a sample pack option to try them yourself and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 15% off your order of any of the products that Redmond has to offer, including their OG sea salt, other seasoning salts, natural toothpaste, bentonite clays, and more. Happy hydrating! Okay, welcome Dr. Alice Pickering on the podcast today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to talk about our topic today.
Yes, I feel like it's a close one for both of us and many moms. But I wanted to introduce you to the audience. You and I have been internet friends now for a long time. We'll have to meet up at some points in the future. And we just realized in hopping on to record this episode that we have been like collaborating and discussing things since August 2019. I think both of us have probably even forgotten about that. But yeah, it's just cool to, you know, be in an internet relationship with a friend who's a mom and also a doctor and also in this perinatal health field and just, you know, trying to improve the lives of the fellow moms around us. So let me read this so that everybody knows who Dr. Alice is. Is that okay if we call you Dr. Alice, or what do you prefer?
Alice is fine. Yeah. I usually Alice just go by first name. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Yeah, I'm fine with that too. So, but for the purposes of this, we will say Dr. Alice Pickering is a licensed clinical psychologist and certified clinical trauma specialist who believes that prioritizing your mental health should be a non-negotiable. She owns a private practice where she treats issues related to depression, anxiety, trauma, life transitions, and relationships. She has a passion for serving women and mothers through various life states and specializes in perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. Through her personal experience of motherhood, she became aware of the challenges that accompany such a long journey before it even starts. She also becomes aware of the limited focus on maternal mental health before, during, and after pregnancy. Yeah, bad. It's bad. Here. She's a mother to two little girls who are 17 months apart and more recently a baby boy. She's a recovering angry mom because two under two can definitely push a mom over the edge. And while she is past that stage now, she remembers it vividly. Her ultimate hope is to foster a community of happy and healthy individuals and families who can make a difference in their home and ultimately the world. I love that. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for being here. And yeah, isn't it kind of wild when we have these personal experiences that help propel our professional and personal, you know, interests and passions in life and things. And also I kind of feel like maybe going into it when we have education like this, like you have, or like I have, I thought that I was going to be like exempt from
completely issues. Like, please excuse me from all of these things. That does not apply to me. And like,
exactly.
It's a hard no, like absolutely applies.
Yeah. And it just isn't like that. And it's like, okay, well, here we are. What are we going to do about it now? So in this episode, we are going to specifically talk about postpartum rage. So in the realm of postpartum mental health, there is more commonly discussed, you know, postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety. There's also things like postpartum OCD or, you know, psychosis, bipolar, but postpartum rage, I guess, doesn't get its own name and diagnosis in a lot of like realms, but it is a component of some of those other bigger umbrella terms. And it's also one that is not discussed often. And I think that is a shame because many women experience it. And then there's this like stigma or shame around it. And then it feels really bad. And so, yeah, can we just kind of start talking about postpartum rage, what it is, what's your experience? And we'll go through like symptoms and why it happens and all that stuff at some point.
Yes. Yeah. So I always say too, like, if you've experienced postpartum rage and you're listening to this episode, like, you don't necessarily need a definition of like postpartum rage. Like, you know what it is when you've experienced it, you know? But it's very much like this intense anger, and it manifests in a lot of, it might manifest in physical ways, you know, where you're slamming things, you're slamming doors, you're a little more aggressive, right? Specifically and more so like the postpartum period, you know, you might be kind of handling your baby a little more intensely than you might, you know, if you weren't experiencing something like postpartum rage. It manifests in emotional ways. There's a lot of shame, a lot of guilt, a lot of kind of desperation even, you know, where it's like, oh my gosh. And this massive part of like, who the heck am I? And like, why are these things happening to me? So yes, postpartum rage, what I like to kind of describe it is, it's like this anger on steroids, you know, you're experiencing anger, there's unmet needs, there's a lot that's contributing to it. And now it's just unfolding in a lot of ways. Sometimes it's even like verbally, right? We say things we don't mean, we yell, we shout. It presents itself in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. And it's something that I feel like the nature of it is fast and hot and quick. And
yes,
it can take you by surprise. And it can be really like, you might think that people would be prone if they had anger issues or irritability, tendency towards irritability prior, but it does not have to be that way. You could just be a pretty cool, calm, even person. And then now with the combination of all of the factors happening, postpartum sleep depression and hormone changes, et cetera, you are experiencing these flashes, of white hot anger and rage. And it's like a impulse, like it's a much more difficult impulse to control. It's not like this slow rolling, like I'm mad. It is rage. Rage is a different thing.
Yes. You go like from 0 to 100, it feels like in a matter of seconds. Right. And once you're there, it's so hard to like come back down from that. It's not till like that moment has kind of passed that you're then like, oh my gosh, what just happened? Right. Like your prefrontal cortex is finally like, okay, yeah, I'm back online now. Like, let's like figure this out. What went on? Right. But like in that moment, your amygdala is like, nope, like you're under threat. Like, this is a big deal. Your life is in danger. Freak out. Right. And so there's just so much that is happening. And when I talk about postpartum rage too, and kind of when I share about it, if a mom comes to see me for therapy, I talk a lot about the biopsychosocial model, and I don't know if that's something you're familiar with, but in the realm of psychology, right, it's like there is a lot of contributing factors that come to play. And it's kind of pinpointing like, okay, what are the contributing factors for you, right? And like in your situation and the things that you're experiencing, what are some of these things that are contributing to this rage experience? And we do want to get ahead of it, right? Because gosh, like in hindsight, when I think back to my personal experiences with rage, I just like, my only thing is like, gosh, I wish I would have gotten help sooner. Like, why did I think that I could just figure it out? Or like, and I think that also speaks to just the shame behind it, right? That like, if you experience these things, you're a bad mom, it's your fault, you know, all of these things. But back to the biopsychosocial model, there's just a lot of elements, right? You have the biology piece of it, your hormones, sleep deprivation, you know, just so much that's happening during this time that's going to, you know, increase your odds of experiencing something like postpartum rage. Then you have the social element of it, right? Just lack of community, lack of support, lack of resources all around, you know, feeling so stretched thin, all like that's going to contribute to that experience as well. And also this image of like what it means to be a good mom, that like social element of like, if you don't do X, Y, and Z, you fail as a mom, right? And so we're all trying to kind of live up to this unrealistic standard of this good mom or like perfect mom that just doesn't exist. It's like, you've got to find what that means for you and what that looks like for you. And then on the psychology side of things, it's a lot of things, you know, like anxiety and depression that might be contributing to it, past trauma, current trauma. And also one thing that I focus on the psychology side is mindset and just the things that we're telling ourselves, because so often we have this propensity to put ourselves down, to sit in the shame, to feel like we're horrible people, to talk and speak negatively about ourselves without even the awareness that we're actually doing that. And so just bringing that to the surface too, of like, how can we approach this with a little more compassion and be a little kinder to ourselves as we're navigating this experience that is rage? So I find that that's a pretty cohesive way of just describing, like, there's a lot that goes into this experience of postpartum rage, and it's not just like your mental health. It's not just lack of support or resources. It's not just the medical biology side of it, right?
Yeah, there's multiple cogs in the wheel. I feel like that's a phrase that I say a lot, but it's just the case for all things, is that it's, you know, 8% this, 3% that, 19% this, da-da-da-da-da. It's all of these aspects, and it's going to be different for everybody. And it, or you could think about it like a pie chart, you know, and there's different proportions of different aspects. Yes. So, from a medical perspective, for me, some things to think about, and I know that you have others too, and I know you give a lot of great examples. I love that biopsychosocial model idea. That is the way it almost, I mean, it's like mind, body, spirit, sort of in a different kind of a way, but like including that psychology aspect, which is really big, because it's, you know, even just the neurotransmitters that are going to be having a harder time being made due to depletion of nutrients, or lack of postpartum full recovery where we're not eating enough, or we are not moving our bodies or getting sunshine, and serotonin is affected, impacted some way, or the way that your brain can never recover from lack of sleep. And some people have higher thresholds for these things. Some people just seem to like, they can handle it better, quote unquote. And part of that may be epigenetic. It may be the lack of different traumas that they've had in the past. They may have a higher stress resiliency from modeling of their parents, and whatever it is, they just maybe had more mental, emotional support and intelligence as children. Intelligence not being because they're smart, but like they were educated and supported in an emotional way. So then now, you know, they're met with the acute stressors of life. Like, my husband has an extremely high stress resiliency tolerance, and he was raised in a really unique setting with a disabled older brother. And I think that it's like a trauma response. You know, there's probably some pathological aspects of it, because he can be a little distant, maybe a little avoidant. But the way that it manifests for him in the majority of the way is that little things do not set him off, because he's like, he has this grander scheme perspective of what's truly important and what's also really, what's truly difficult, because he experienced it and I did not. And so I wig out at every little step sometimes. And it's just been such an interesting thing to learn from him. I'm like, okay, you know, I mean, he's rubbed off on me now. It's been almost 11 years. And so I have a higher stress resiliency tolerance now than I did, but I can, my poor little first time mom self, I remember the first time I experienced this postpartum rage was in the middle of the night. And that's kind of my pattern with it. When I experience that white hot flash of rage where you're just like so pissed, and it's not like something for me in my experience, I want to hear yours too, is I don't experience it as like a slow roiling boil of me being like, okay, I'm getting mad. Okay. Like, I'm getting frustrated. This is so annoying. And I'm like having a lot of mental chatter. It's like out of nowhere, I'm like slamming my fist into the bed. You know what I mean? or like screaming into a pillow or something out of nowhere. And it's almost like the behavior happens before my brain can even catch up to what's happening. And I've had that to some extent with three of the postpartums, of my four postpartums, in varying degrees. Like with one of them, it maybe only happened two times or something. But with my first, it happened a lot. And then just now with this most recent postpartum, it happened a lot in revolving around sleep, of not being able to sleep and just feeling so annoyed and so pissed off. I also feel like when you're in that kind of different consciousness state of coming out of sleep, being woken, whatever it is, you are like a little bit more, in that amygdala.
Your
prefrontal cortex is not on as much. And so you're speaking out of this, or acting rather out of this like animalistic mindset. Can you speak to some of those things?
Yes. Yeah. With what you're sharing too, right? If you think about like sleep, you know, and you're sleeping, you're sound asleep, and suddenly maybe you hear your baby crying and it's like the screeching yelp, and suddenly you're just like startled awake, right? Your body, right? Your sympathetic nervous system is just like on. It just like shot on. It doesn't have time to think, right? Of like, oh, okay, like let's assess this. Like, is something actually wrong? Like, I know my baby's safe in their crib or wherever in their room, right? It's just like this primal instinct of like, boom, you're on. And that, I think we all respond differently to that kind of sympathetic like surge, so to speak, right? It's like, there is that like fight or flee response, you know, and oftentimes, you know, you can see it like, okay, I just want to like run away. I don't want to deal with this. I want to like just run and hide. I don't care about this. Or it's like you said, that like fight response of like, okay, something is just like, this is pissing me off, you know, and I'm going to like punch the bed or like scream into the pillow. And it's because your sympathetic nervous system is just immediately activated, right? Like, you go from 0 to 100 because it's your physiology that's kicking in at that point. And it's really hard to fight against physiology, you know? And in those situations too, it's just recognizing, like getting to that space where you can be outside of that moment to realize like, okay, like I've got some work to do here outside of this experience. And then to be able to better equip myself, right? And that's when you go and change some of those things, you know, you figure out some sleep stuff, you figure out, okay, like let's tag team this with partner so I'm not like handling it alone, right? Or you find some ways to cope through that. But oftentimes it's that sympathetic nervous system response. And for some of us, it is just more intense and more elevated. And a lot of that is contributed through just like past experiences, some trauma experiences too, where your sympathetic nervous system is just in a higher state, right? Like we've got to regulate that sympathetic nervous system so that we don't continue to go into these experiences from a psychological standpoint, you know? I know for me, when I experienced my rage, so for you, it sounds like it was like more immediate, like that sympathetic response. You're just like in the middle of the night, you're woken up, you're just like, what the fudge? Like, what is going on? You know, you need a minute to like gather yourself, but your body's just like, no, danger, like immediate, like you've disrupted my sleep. What is going on? For me, it was more so related to just like the demands, like the demands and the overstimulation. And it was really prevalent for me. So I had my second, it was 2020, it was COVID. She was born in July of 2020. All of like the shenanigans of everything that was going on around that time. But I was fine for a while. It wasn't until she was closer to like a year old, and my oldest at the time then was like 2.5, you know? And that is when I really like just the demands, the sleep deprivation, the like always being needed, like needing to be on all the time, trying to juggle like work and trying to juggle my husband's schedule with his work. Like it just was a lot. And so for me, it was kind of the slow build, you know? It wasn't like in the moment when I would experience it, it felt immediate, but when I look back, I can see that there was like this process and like this unfolding of my rage that then just my nervous system was like always on, like just in sympathetic overdrive. And it was like, okay, like now I'm here. I've got to just like figure out how to get out of this space, you know?
It's like your thresholds of bullshit tolerance
Yep.
were yes. dropping. Like they yes. were getting eroded by, totally. You know, a yes. one-year-old and a 2.5-year-old and COVID and husband work and your own work and all of it. Like it just, it's, yeah, sometimes it is slower to develop in that kind of a way. And I love that you brought up that it wasn't until you were about a year postpartum, because I think that people think this happens like on day 5 of having a newborn or something. And often it's, yeah, it's not until a couple of months usually that like postpartum depression and anxiety would manifest. They can earlier, mm-hmm. but typically you're like trying to then sort out, is this like a little bit of baby blues from just hormone drop, or is it true mm-hmm. postpartum mental health? But it doesn't just like stop in that immediate area. It can go up for a couple of years.
Yes.
And then usually sometimes people are then having more children and it can kind of stack and be complicated, because we were never meant to raise children in even two parent couples. Like it wasn't
right.
That is not what humans have done throughout history.
No.
We have always been in community where there were older or different, you know, aunts, uncles, friends, grandparents, etc., to help bear the load of this. And mm-hmm. it's crazy making, trying to do it in a society where there's just two people, because it's not enough. Simply, it's just not enough. But then also, it's usually just one. It's usually just yes. mom.
And, yes.
And then if there are multiple kids, it's like, how do you do that? And then, yeah, now most women have to work to some level or capacity because of economic needs. And so they're yeah. trying to have literally multiple jobs, multiple 40-hour a week, although parenting is much more than 40 hours a week. So it's just like, duh, of course. And so, but still, mm-hmm. like you said, there's that leave it to beaver perfect mom kind of ideology I think we all grew up with. That's like, nope, I've never yeah. gotten mad at my kid ever. I've never felt that way. No, I just love it. This fills me up. I love every single second mm-hmm. moment. And it's like, one of my, and I think you do a really good job about this on social media too. It's like, obviously we love being moms. It's our whole world, and it's totally. Our whole professional life and world too. Like it's everything. It's the most amazing thing. And it is hard as shit. It's so yes. hard. And I don't yes. try to sugarcoat it. I'm like, no, there is yep. nothing harder than this. Medical school was cake. Cake. Like
literally. Compared. Yes. Like, I'm like, you know, like grad school, right? I'm like, grad school, like what was that? Like so easy yeah. compared to this.
Nothing.
You know?
It was nothing. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, the demands that just never stop, the lack of being able to have a breather, the overstimulation, like all of it is really tough to continually keep ourselves regulated while we're trying to also teach our kids yeah. to stay regulated and do all these different things. So it's like, we understand why it's happening. And so it's sad to me when women do feel, I mean, I feel it though too. I still like when I would yeah. experience those moments, feel intense shame about my reaction and that I was bad. I was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have yelled. I shouldn't yeah. have slammed the door. I shouldn't have punched the pillow. Like that was crazy. That was out of control. That was psychotic behavior. Like I'm a psychopath. Like what, you know, whatever the things we are, yeah. that we can tell ourselves.
Well, see, that's like, and then like that mental health side of it, right? Or like that mindset side of it, of like what you're telling yourself then in the aftermath of that. I would actually argue that like you punching a pillow is like a relatively appropriate response, you know, like, yeah. hey, this is going to just give me a moment to like regulate, you know, but really, right? Like, do you want to do that every single time? No, probably not, right? You want to find other ways to cope with that. But like in that moment, like punching a pillow is better than like losing your mind on your partner or on your child, right? Like, so in that sense, like True. Give yourself some credit, like punching a pillow, not the worst thing that you could have done in that moment, you know, probably pretty well, adaptive and actually.
Okay. Well, good. There's a book. I don't, maybe you've read it. It's called The Dance of Anger. I actually have not read it. I've wanted to read it.
I have not actually. No.
Okay. Who, maybe we should start a book club or something.
Seriously. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I will put it in the show notes, even though I can't recommend it because I haven't read it, but The Dance of Anger, I've heard really good things about it, and in specifics, how it pertains to women's expression of anger, because we are sort of taught that it is not something women do and that it is Correct. Like masculine yep. or scary, you know? So there's yes. all of that too.
It's not a feminine feature, right? Like,
yes.
Yes. It's looked down upon, like heaven forbid you experience this emotion, you know? And oftentimes, yeah, you hide it. And the fact is like, you're human, you're going to experience a range of emotion. You're not, just because you're like a female doesn't, you know, automatically like get you out of that.
Exactly. And that there is more harm caused by pent up emotions that are not expressed healthfully, because mm-hmm. we can also be unhealthy in our expressions of anger, where we are damaging our relationships with our people around yes. us, or scaring them, traumatizing them, etc., or physically hurting people, of course, emotionally yes. hurting them or physically hurting them, which are not safe and healthy. And we need to mm-hmm. be going to therapy if we need yes. help like that. I love therapy so much. And I know you have really awesome resources for that, which we will also put in the show note, but you have a whole practice called Postpartum Link. And you have mm-hmm. also like all these really cool courses about anger and just recovery and mental health in motherhood, which is, we need so much more of that. I wanted to mention though, really quick, this idea of, a friend told me this a long time ago, and I don't know if this is actually like a tenet in psychology, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, but something about the idea that like anger is, or one of the things that can elicit anger as an emotion is threats to our basic needs. Like if we feel like we're not mm-hmm. getting our needs met, there can be this element mm-hmm. of anger with it. And that partially that can be why it is manifested around sleep so much, because it's like, go to sleep. Like I yes. have to sleep. Like I literally have to sleep. You have to go to sleep. If you don't go to sleep, I can't go to sleep. I'm like, what am I going to totally. Do? Like, I can't go one more night of not sleeping. I'm going to die. Like you feel like you're going to yes. die. It's like literally that threat of.
Yeah. It's that threat basic- to your sympathetic nervous system, right? Like your whole autonomic nervous system is like, yes. yeah, this is a threat, you know, but you have to, and oftentimes what I describe to you is so much of modern stressors today are like psychological threats. It's not so much like actual physical threats. I'm not saying that like doesn't exist, right? But you're not like being attacked by a bear, you know, and you have to like decipher that, like, yes, my child right now who's crying and needing me, like my body feels like this is a threat, but rationally, I obviously know that they are not, right? But you're just like at odds, and like, you're just compete, like your body physiologically is just like, no, but this is a threat to your sleep. Like literally, right? It's like, you're not getting sleep. You need sleep. And your body's like, give me sleep, please. You know? So,
well, and it's often like, imagine a crying baby. It's not just like that they're mm-hmm. awake and they're happy and they're cute and they're looking at you smiling and stuff. It's like they're crying and yes. it can feel usually, and that can feel so, there's so many things to do with that, because if you yeah. were maybe somebody who was parented in a way that you weren't allowed to have emotions and cry yes. as a child, and yep. you think that crying is, you know, kind of a weakness, or you need to just like tough it up, buttercup. Obviously that is not appropriate for a newborn to have any kind of realm of understanding of that. Right. It's literally their only way to communicate is to cry.
Totally.
And so that in and of itself can be very triggering for somebody. But then also, even if that isn't really part of your picture, like for me, I'm not bothered by crying. In that kind of a way, I was allowed to cry. I cried a lot. I still cry a lot, I feel like.
Yes. Yep.
But for me, and I think a lot of parents, especially first-time moms, you feel like, what is
wrong? You feel helpless. Like, yes.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And uh-huh. you're just like, what do you need? I don't know what you need. I don't know what to do. Like, yes. can someone help? Like, you know, and often yes. it only gets worse if you hand this like little newborn baby off to your partner, because they're not really attuned to that person as much. Or right. if you're breastfeeding, it's like you again, you know, it's this whole like meme idea of looking at your partner with their useless nipples or something.
Yes. Sleeping.
And it can yes. feel just like consonant. There's no break. And also just every part of you instinctually, your whole body and brain and soul wants this baby to be happy and have all their needs met mm-hmm. and you love them, but you also have needs, and it can be really difficult to get them all met. So I think this all goes into all of the different kinds of postpartum mental health, but specifically yes. with that rage element and how it can manifest in these moments of everything just stop, like just shut up and stop.
Yes.
So I can think yes. clearly for 2 seconds. Like yes. I am not experiencing postpartum rage at any point now. I did in the very beginning with this new fourth baby, because she had a breathing complication that made her sleep and feeding yeah. so complicated and hard. And it was just constant, never ended. It was like for months, for the first 4 or 5 months, it was just yeah. really, really intense.
You were in so it.
I was in it, and I experienced it in the middle of the night often when I just felt like, this is so stupid. Like, why can I not sleep? But what was I going to say? Oh, but now I can feel, I think, normal levels of just like anger. There's a difference, but where I'm
yes.
like, when there's multiple kids in your space, even if there's one kid in your space, but just that constant sort of, I know this isn't really like part of our topic, but just the constant demand, like you mentioned, like that is, and the overstimulation, I would have never considered myself like a sensory type sensitive person. And I don't even think you have to be for this to be, everybody has a limit and a threshold.
Totally.
And sometimes it can just feel so exhausting to me and so frustrating that I can't have like one full complete thought in motherhood. Like,
yes.
I just want to be able to have the end of that thought and then not forget it immediately because I was interrupted again, you know?
Yes.
And oh my gosh, I mean, my cognitive like need is really high in that realm. And I really prioritize that. And so right now that's something I'm getting frustrated with the ages of my kids. It's like, someone's always asking me a question or demanding something or telling me a story. And it's like,
yes.
How?
Yes.
So how do I
chill? Yes.
Yeah. Everybody just like get distracted by something for 5 minutes so I can finish this thought. So
let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
Stress management can come from multiple different angles, including exercise, proper diet, and restful sleep. But did you know you can also support your stress response using herbs like ashwagandha, shatavari, rhodiola, milky oats, and holy basil? These adaptogenic herbs are the ones found in Needed's stress support product, which has become one of my absolute favorite supplements I take. It's safe to take while trying to conceive and while nursing, and at any point in your motherhood besides during your pregnancy. These herbs are commonly used in traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine to support cortisol's response to daily life and to promote restful sleep. Go to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 20% off. Again, go to thisisneeded.com and save 20% with the code HEALTHYMOTHER.
Okay, back to the show.
I wanted to talk about some of the other reasons why it happens, or maybe like some more of the medical things to look into if you're experiencing this. So I wanted to mention thyroid health, anemia, some of these things that can help happen postpartum that can go under the radar, and you may not have anything actually biochemically going on and you still may experience these symptoms, but just know that it is common too to experience some issues with your thyroid or with your iron stores postpartum that may be contributing negatively to your experience and make you more susceptible to these postpartum mental health disorders. So with the thyroid specifically, many women have subclinical hypothyroidism. Usually it's low thyroid function. And it can be a common thing to happen during pregnancy as well. So we always need to be monitoring that. I think even just a base level, you know, TSH, free T3, free T4, and then total T3 and total T4 should be done at some point in your pregnancy blood work, even if you've never had a history of thyroid issues. If you have had a thyroid history, we obviously need to monitor it more and more robustly. But, and then in postpartum, which this almost never happens, like you must ask your provider. They're not going to do it for you. But ideally we do it at about 1 month postpartum, because within that first month, things are happening. There's such dramatic shifts happening with your hormones. And I actually want to say this, that the placenta leaving your body is the single biggest shift in hormones that a woman will ever experience. This is like, you've probably seen that
in your life. Quote, yes.
In your whole life. Like it is huge. It is so significant. And if you are lactating, if you're going into the breastfeeding state of hormonal picture, you are flip-flopping now. Like during your pregnancy, you've had high progesterone, high estrogen, and very low prolactin. Now this baby comes out of your body. It completely flips. Estrogen and progesterone are suppressed and prolactin's going high. And it's just like, it can feel horrible. It can feel wonky and weird and not good. So, I mean, just that in and of itself obviously is going to create some weaknesses in our thresholds. But with the thyroid, as all of that other hormonal cascade is adjusting itself, plus stress, plus lack of sleep, plus all these things, it can put a lot of stress on our thyroid. It can also be the thing to tip you into autoimmune thyroid problems if you have that predisposition. If it's in your family history, you have an epigenetic predisposition, whatever it is, now you have this situation where whether your birth was great or not, it's still an acute stressor on your body. And then the way that you immediately recover from that. So, but let's pretend a situation where a woman has a very traumatic birth and then a very unsupported postpartum. This happens all the time, right? This could just be the perfect storm to trigger now an autoimmune something of any kind. But now let's just go on this thyroid example because we're here. now you're having some thyroid symptoms, but maybe first you have a hyperthyroid storm or a hyperthyroid. Mm-hmm. So it's called like thyroiditis, where your body has too much thyroid hormone and it's starting to make you feel very anxious. You're having like a racing heart rate. Even when you're at rest or you're trying to sleep, you feel anxious in your body. You feel jittery. You're having looser stools. You're losing more weight than you should. Maybe you're feeling hot and sweaty. Mm-hmm. There's lots of different hyperthyroid symptoms that we should all be aware of, but we need to check and make sure that the thyroid is managing this adjustment postpartum well. And so someone on your team, and if it's not going to be your OB or your midwife, sorry, you're going to have to take this into your own hands and reach out to somebody or maybe go to one of those independent labs.
And unfortunately, I think a lot of moms do, right? When I have a mom who comes in for therapy and she's experiencing rage or, you know, very elevated just anger symptoms, I always like off the bat recommend like, hey, if you haven't had blood work done recently or anytime over the last like month or two, like please go get labs drawn, go get blood work, check your thyroid, just check all the things, you know, like start there and see if there's any kind of underlying factors that might be contributing to this experience, right? And I do think it's always great to start with some of that medical side thing. Unfortunately, I do end up with moms who are like, no, like I've done all the things and like I've gone to like a functional medicine doctor, you know, or they're like, I've gone like even beyond my OB who just did like a standard panel. And it's like, things are checking out okay, you know? And so then it's like, okay, mm-hmm. Well, like let's look at mineral depletion and like what's going on there. Yes. And I know you can speak to so much of that too, but I do think it's so good. And it's just important to at least get like a thyroid panel, like you were saying, or start
and
with some blood work to see what is going on.
Yes, absolutely. And I just wanted to finish up that thought of hyperthyroidism autoimmune is called Graves. And that is also extremely undiagnosed in the postpartum population. So let's just pretend though you've ruled this out. It's not your thyroid. Okay. Now let's also rule out not step by step. I think we should just do this all together. But if you've had any kind of like subclinical anemias happening or low ferritin or something, if that has continued, or maybe if you had a lot of bleeding postpartum, that can absolutely contribute to feelings of anxiety and depression is being anemic. Your body, just your stress resiliency is going to be lower when we're not having good oxygenation to the brain and to our tissues, and we're not going to recover as well and bounce back, quote unquote. But I don't mean that bounce back in like a, you're like slim and trim kind of way. I mean, like literally you're not going to be able to just feel good in your body if you are struggling just to get oxygen to your tissues. So we need to rule out those things. If you wanted to go further into nutrient deficiency testing, you could do that. It's not common. And it's also like, it's not that I don't think it's relevant, but I just think in the very short, immediate postpartum time, I don't think it's that relevant. I think we need to give ourselves a little bit of time. And then now if we're at 1 year postpartum, we're still having symptoms, maybe we look into that kind of testing. Would you agree?
Totally. Yes. Yeah. And I think the thing too is it can feel really overwhelming of like, where the heck do I even begin? Because there are so many different routes and avenues that you can take. And I just say like, pick one thing, like just start with one thing, you know, and like, you don't have to do all the things all at once, like start with one thing. And oftentimes what I do find where people start is either kind of like that mental health side of things, which I think is great because we need so much emotional support and just like validation of like, no, you're not crazy. Like you are not alone. And just like that relief of like, oh my gosh, okay. Like I'm unburdened by this like shame here of like, oh my gosh, I've been carrying the weight of this and now I can let it go because I disclosed what I've been experiencing. And then, I also see oftentimes like the lab side of things of like getting blood work done, making sure labs look okay in that avenue. And I think those are great places to start.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So then just to recap what we just said, we were like, if this is you and you're experiencing this, you're like, where do I start? Let's make sure that there's no medical physiological things happening. So getting a good thyroid panel done, a good anemia panel, which includes your ferritin, CBC, CMP, vitamin D levels, lipids, all the things. Okay. Then we're also now looking into how much is the sleep deprivation aspect contributing to your situation? Yes. How much is your like lack of support or you know, suboptimal support happening? Is that mm-hmm. something that's contributing? Nutritional deficiencies. So like we may not actually test right now, but what could we be doing? We need to be really prioritizing postpartum nutrition. So I say for at least the first month postpartum, we're eating 4 full meals a day. And I don't mean 3 meals and a big snack. I mean 4 full meals plus 2 snacks. So it's a lot of food. And the way to do this is to prep while you are pregnant. You can freeze a lot of meals, freeze even like crock pot ready vegetables that are chopped up that are raw that you're going to cook later, or have a meal train with friends and family that live close by, or they can even contribute to money to like DoorDash type funds, whatever it is. But it is a huge deal. And if you think that you're going to cook with a newborn, you're just wrong. It's not going to happen. And you must have a plan. You must have a plan for this, because it's such such an important way to support yourself. So, and continue your prenatal supplementation. So continue your omega-3s that you were on. Continue your prenatal that you were on. If you were on choline, great. Continue it. If you know what I mean? Let's not just drop off all of that nutrition. And I know it gets harder when you have a baby and it feels like you can't even just go pee in the day, but set it right next to your bed. Make it easy. Maybe put an alarm on your phone. Make sure that you are continuing
those
things.
Get a pill box. I also put everything you need in like your pill box. Have that. That's what I use as a pill box, because, and it's like every week I'll go through and I load it, you know, that way I just don't, it's automatic. I can just grab it and I'm done. I'm ready to go.
Exactly. Make it easy for yourself, and, you know, load up your bedside cart thing next to you when you're resting with snacks and water and hydration minerals. I love the Redmond Relight minerals for that. And we have the code Healthy as a Mother to help you save 15% if you want it. I love it. It's amazing. I think also there's so much to be said about like making breast milk robustly when we have enough minerals on board. But then if you have some kind of trauma, whether the birth was traumatic or your postpartum was traumatic, there is resources for you. So can you talk about your practice and how, and like, who are your optimal populations, and like, how do you serve them in which states and things like that?
Yeah. So I have the states listed on my website. There's multiple. And so I don't remember all of them off the top of my head, but it's a majority of the US. And every year I feel like new states are being added to the list. And so with the people that I help, or the women that I help, is a lot of pregnant postpartum moms, but a lot of moms too that are like 2 years out after having kids, you know, and I do find that a lot of times that's what I get, is they're like, okay, I can finally like come up for some air, you know, and I have some time, but I'm still struggling. And so I do work with birth trauma. I use a form of therapy called accelerated resolution therapy that involves the bilateral stimulation and the eye movements. And it's just really fascinating. I love it. I see it just work phenomenally to process birth trauma. And I use it for that. I use it also for intrusive thoughts, moms who are experiencing intrusive thoughts, and like, let's work with that. You know, there's this tendency to avoid and want to avoid the intrusive thoughts. We have to work through them. I use accelerated resolution therapy for that. But I also work, you know, I have a lot of different therapies that I pull from, and I kind of like interweave all of them into my practice and to help support a mom. But it's a lot of anxiety, depression, relationship shifts, identity shifts, working through anger, rage, you know, getting support. And there is a lot of value in the emotional support piece, you know. I find that a lot of moms really benefit from just like, okay, yes, like I'm not alone in this, and I have somebody to share these things with, because even within certain communities, there is a lot of shame in expressing like, hey, I'm struggling, or I'm having a hard time mentally. I don't feel like myself, or, you know, I feel like I just have so much resentment in my relationship, and like, I kind of hate my husband right now. Like, I'm just pissed off at him all the time, right? Like, nobody's really talking about these things, you know, or you go in community maybe, or you have some conversation with other women and it's just like, yeah, like things are good. Like, yeah, like the adjustment's been going so well. And, you know, it's like, but how has it really, you know? And like,
right.
I'm far enough in this that whenever I hear a mom telling me like, no, like, yeah, like the transition to two has been so good. Like we're, you know, we're kind of just figuring it out and it's been so well. I'm like, dude, how are you really? Yeah. Like, seriously, you know, so like, just be honest.
Just tell
like,
me.
I know, yeah. I know you're having a hard time. Like we all are having a hard time. Okay. So I find that therapy is just a really supportive and warm environment to be able to come and share those things freely without then like carrying just the guilt and the weight of that. Like you leave it in therapy and you're like, okay, awesome. I needed that, you know?
Yeah. And then to learn the tools to be able to fix it. It's not like you're going to fix it, but you're going to help yourself know what to do when those feelings come back up, which they inevitably will, in a healthy way. Sometimes we just repeat patterns from the way that we had in our family. And it's like, literally that is like the definition of generational trauma. It's how it gets passed down. If you're trying to break things or do things differently, then it takes a lot of intentional effort. And yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that usually your clients aren't until a bit further out postpartum, because it is so, therapy is amazing, but it's also mentally exhausting because you're like peeling back all these layers. But sometimes just that support, like you said, maybe a support group too. There was the most amazing lactation group that I was a part of as a first-time mom in San Diego that was like an unspoken therapy session for all of us.
Okay, yep.
it was positioned as a lactation group, but it kind of morphed with like this very consistent group of women that would come. And I found it to be, it was the highlight of my whole week. Like I lived for that group. I needed it. It was, yes, I would talk about my breastfeeding issues, which was the root cause of most of my problems too. So, I mean, it was definitely, you know, twofer for that. But just women coming in community and gathering and being able to have that space without even, like you were saying, with all the technical, amazing therapy tools of helping to resolve specifics like the trauma and stuff, just to be able to say out loud the way you feel and hear that other people feel that way, that is, women are attuned to that. We need that. Yes. That is literally what we have we're so used to that and we don't have it anymore. And it's like, of course, there's so much issue happening. We are such communal beings and we need to be able
to thrive in relationship, you know?
Yes. Yes. 100%. So I really love that for so many reasons. And if this is you, then maybe you can try to search for any kind of a postpartum support group in your area. I also just have to say it because I wanted to say it earlier. It's so interesting to me how there's this stigma attached to postpartum mental health, meaning like as if there's an equal sign. Oh, I have some kind of postpartum mental health thing that I'm working with equals I don't love my baby. And it's like,
right.
Why?
Yeah.
Where did that come from and why? And no, this is not true. Shut up.
No.
I mean, there are probably some people who.
It's true, right? Like, the fact that you're like taking the steps to not, you know, to like do something differently, to address those things, to not sit and hide out, like that speaks to just a different level of strength that I think so many moms have. And like, when you step into that, I'm just like, you know what? Like, no, I'm done with this. And I'm going to talk about it, or I'm going to do the things that are going to help and support me through some of this. It just takes a lot of strength to one, admit that, and then to go forward and follow through with that. So if anything, it just speaks to like the love that you have for your children or your child, you know?
I fully agree. Fully agree. Okay. And then I wanted to say two more things and see if you had any others in terms of like ways to help increase our thresholds and, you know, help with the management of postpartum rage. One, homeopathy. So homeopathy is a field of medicine that is very hard to understand. I totally get it. Naturopathic medical doctors like myself use it all the time. And it is amazing. It's safe in pregnancy. It's safe for 1 day old newborns. It's safe for breastfeeding. The worst thing that can happen is that nothing happens. It just doesn't work. But it can be really, really awesome for mood related issues. And like you were mentioning, I thought of this because you were mentioning the classic picture of feeling really resentful towards a husband and just feeling like, I hate him. Yeah. I don't want to be around him. And like that indifference. And one of the top remedies for postpartum mood and mental health issues is a remedy that's called sepia, S-E-P-I-A. And that is exactly a sepia woman. A sepia woman is like, just wants to like run away and like leave everything mm-hmm. and is really particularly resentful to other husbands. They feel a lot better when they're in the sunshine. Like their symptoms are ameliorated in the sunshine. They also feel a lot better when they exercise. And so there are little particular symptom pictures like that for various remedies. And it is worth it to work with a homeopath, somebody like her homeopathy. I'm going to put her information in the show notes too, so you can check out that because it's better to have somebody who's like really, really well trained to choose your remedy, but you can also just go online and like read some blogs. I don't know if you have any experience with homeopathy. I feel like it is a small field, right?
Yes, it is. So I've used sepia in the past, more so as it related to my menstrual cycle. Leading up to my menstrual cycle or my period, I did experience, and I feel like this is a whole nother topic, but it ties into rage. I did experience a lot of, you know, it's like PMS, but on steroids. And I know there's like PMDD and all of that stuff too. Right. But, leading up to my period, that is when I would also experience a lot of like my rage. And so I did use sepia in support through that. So
great. Yeah. Did you notice any help with that?
What's that?
Did you notice any like help?
I did.
Helpfulness?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was like dramatic by any means, but I feel like it supported, like it just helped right. to not feel as intense. Like it took some of the sting away, so to speak. Another one that I used too was Arnica. So that was like a different one that I used as well. So I would use both of those, but that was just my personal experience with that.
No, and I love that. And it's okay. It's like we have to remember if there's multiple cogs in the wheel of causation of these different mental health manifestations, then there will be multiple cogs in the wheel of the treatment approach. Like you can't right. just say, oh, I'm going to take a high dose omega 3 and everything's going to be okay. It's like, no. We need to do a couple totally. Of different approaches here so that we attack it from all angles. Because, like you said, with the biopsychosocial model, there's so many factors that are playing into this. So, mm-hmm. one last thing I wanted to say is that. Something that really helped me this time around, and this is not going to be like checkbox treatment for postpartum rage, but I think so I don't know, it's just a different spin. And I don't know why I wouldn't have thought of this in my other postpartums, but with this time I really, really noticed that despite the difficulty of having a baby with a breathing issue, which then caused feeding and sleeping issues significantly, mm-hmm. If I could prioritize joy in my day,
yeah,
I could handle it all just a little bit better. So I yes. created a note in my phone of things that bring me joy. Literally, that's the title of it. Things that bring me joy. And I just started listing yeah. off like sometimes it was
like a
gratitude
things like, practice, right?
Yes, yes. And, yes. and but it would be like actionable things I would do. Like if I could physically yes. find the time okay. in the day to prioritize like a hot mm-hmm. bath, love it, makes me so happy.
Yes.
Or reading okay. my book makes me so happy. Or going on a walk, like something I had to do, or not had to, but I really, really strove. And my husband was in full support of this, which I loved so much because he was like, what do you need to do today to like get through, basically?
Yeah.
And I would just like pick one thing. Like I would either go on the walk for 20 minutes or take a 20-minute bath yes. or read for 20 minutes or whatever. It doesn't take a ton of time. But I really, really made that an absolute priority. Okay, when in the day am I going to do this thing that will fill me just enough yeah. so I can like not bottom out? Because I was okay. really on the verge of bottoming out this time for
it's
a couple of those weeks.
It's that self-care piece, right? Of like, yes, you do need some of that self-care. Like you do need that time to yourself. You do need a moment to like replenish, to walk away, to like potentially remove yourself from the situation for a bit so that you can – right? Like fill your cup. And I say, mm-hmm. this is something I say often too, is like moms are great at pouring from an empty cup. Like we do it all the freaking time. Like we have no reserves left and somehow we still show up for our children, for our family, for all the things. Right. And like, that's okay for a hot minute, but you cannot sustain that. That it's just not sustainable long-term. You do need a break. You do need to do some of those things that bring you joy or that connect you to just parts of yourself that maybe are unfamiliar, you know, for a bit because you're in the thick of mothering. I just think that those things are so, so helpful. And for me personally, I can relate to like just the walk, right? Of like, yeah, at some point in the day, I have to like go out for a walk. Like I just need to go and I need to do it alone. I don't want anybody with me. I'm not bringing the dog. I don't care. You know, like I am just me by myself. I'm going to do that. And so it's carving out those small pockets of like self-care, you know, or those moments. One thing too, that I want to add as well, is oftentimes I don't think that I think we sometimes just don't listen to our body's cues. You know, I think sometimes we like push through those. But if there's anything that I would encourage, at least when it comes to like rage, is to just listen to your body's cues, because oftentimes like your body's telling you what you need, you then have to listen to it. Right. And one of the things that I see often when it comes to sleep is like this tendency then to like, okay, like baby's down. And it's like, oh, they're going to wake up again in like 2 hours anyway. So I'm going to like sit and like watch this show, or, you know, you like binge on the couch and you're like, okay, like, yes, but like, go to bed. Like your body needs sleep. Like get yourself to sleep. Even if it's those 2 hours and your baby might wake up, right? Like get yourself to bed. Like you don't need to sit and watch the TV show. It's okay. The priority here is getting rest, you know? And so I just see that coming up often too, of like our tendency to like continue to like push our body beyond its limits. And I think it's important to just acknowledge that like, no, like let's tune into what our bodies actually need and then give ourselves the opportunity to meet those needs.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. I think that it's really common to maybe feel good initially postpartum, especially if you did have a, you know, positive birth experience and now you're kind of riding this oxytocin high, and maybe you were a very physical active person prior in your life and during your pregnancy or something. And so you feel really antsy. I mean, this is a population I'm always trying to figure out how to better serve, is that type of woman who like can't even just sit in bed for like 3 or 4 days. They get antsy and they must get up and go on a walk, go to the park, go to the beach. Da, 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 da. Yeah. And I'm like, let's just relax, you guys.
We need to slow down. Like we need to intentionally slow down, right? And like, you have to give yourself that space. I see that often too. And like my like moms that are so overwhelmed, it's like, there's an element of that too. That's like, we're contributing to the overwhelm, you know, like we're taking on some of the things that we just don't need to be.
Yes. And it's this immediate postpartum period of the first month can be so restorative. There's a tenet in ancient cultures, in many ancient cultures around the world, that postpartum, when a woman has had a baby, she's in this very delicate space, this kind of like liminal in between space where her body, and I mean, this is the belief that they had back then, of that there's an opportunity to heal deeply, you know, generational DNA, epigenetic aspects, if taken care of well. But on the flip side, if we are not taken care of well, or we don't take care of ourselves rather, then it could be the opposite. And we are now set up for years of disease, or, you know, maybe it is the autoimmune propensity now expressing itself, et cetera. And so I really try to tell people, this is an opportunity. You know it's coming, right? It's not like anybody's surprised that they're having this baby. You know it's coming. You have time to prep and plan. Treat it as if you can. Obviously, there is some privilege with this, of course. Treat it if you can, though, like you're having a major like hip surgery or something, or a knee replacement. No one would ever expect somebody recovering from a big physical event like that to just like get up and bounce back and like, well, whatever it is. Yes. And it's like, no, you just take this one precious time, especially when it's your first child. It'll never ever be the same when you have more children again. It's infinitely harder to maintain that, like, you know, if it's just the minimum midwife 5-5-5 equation, which is like 5 days in the bed, 5 days on the bed, and 5 days around the bed. Even just that is so hard for American women to listen to and then stay compliant with, when we look at traditional cultures all around the world who had very, very healthy, robust postpartum women and low mental health issues, were staying in bed completely taken care of by other people for 40 days. That would be unthinkable to
like,
American women.
Like, how do we get that? Like, where? Yes. I'm like, yes, please. Like, how do we get more of that, right? I think often in the US, what I see is applauded, and I've seen it personally too, is you have the mom who, you know, and I'm involved in a church community and everything too, but you have moms who are like bringing their 1 week old baby to church. I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you here?
I know.
Like, why are you not at home right now? And you see the people around, oh my goodness, like you look so great. I cannot believe you just pushed out this baby. Oh my goodness. Like, good for you for getting out of the house so fast. Like, and I'm over here like inside just like screaming where I'm like, no,
I know.
Why is she needs to be at home? Why are you not at home? Like, what are you doing? Just have people come to you if you want the people, but like, you don't need to be going out and like, I don't know.
No,
I just think it speaks to a lot of that. Like, you know, it's applauded in so many ways, right? Like, oh, you did bounce back. Oh, look at you. You had a baby and it was no big deal, right? Like, oh, you can't let this baby change your life. There's just so many messages around that I'm like,
I fully agree.
No.
And it's the same thing when people are like, well, I'm working out as my life, and they have a 4 day old in the bassinet while they're lifting weights.
Right.
I have seen that in the, like, you know, CrossFit type community where people are, I'm thinking of like one particular, I think she was like a professional, and I mean, I understand it can be probably very hard when that is your day in and day out, but her baby was literally 3 days old and she was squatting at the gym. And I'm just like, this is not an issue of like what makes you, and I think the argument would be, well, this is what fills my mental emotional cup. And it's like, okay,
right,
this is to the detriment of your body, and your chance of things like pelvic organ prolapse are going to be much higher if you do not obey
rest.
These general anatomical physiological facts that are going on with your body right now. Like, you can, I'm sorry, like, if pick any other way, I'm sure there's something else that will help you feel mental, emotionally happy. This is not
totally
it right now. And we do really need to stop glorifying that, because it's dangerous. It's unsafe. Mm-hmm. It's not the goal. It's not something that's cute or cool or impressive. It's actually really sad. And I'm just like, you're contributing really negatively to new moms all over the place, making them think that like, this is what's the cool thing to do. The cool thing to do is plan it so that you can literally sit in your bed for as long as possible and rest and soak up your baby and just like enjoy this one very small, very short period of time in your life. Because I find that those women who really don't do that, who don't prioritize it because maybe they feel good, they crash and burn at 3 or 4 months postpartum.
Totally. Yeah.
And it's like, what did you think was going to happen? You thought you were going to ride your adrenaline and your oxytocin for the rest of time? Like, you never allowed yourself to recover. And now you can't, because you don't have a sleepy newborn who sleeps 20 hours a day anymore.
Yes.
Now you have like a full baby that's going through a sleep regression. And it's like, maybe you're going back to work, or you're starting to pump for them or something. And there's these more complicated factors, when if we could have taken our immediate, you know, that first couple of weeks, at least, I mean, at least a month, that's still 10 days less than what the cultural norm around the world for humans would be. If we're thinking 40 days, 1 month would be 10 days less still. And we cannot get women to even do it for that 5-5-5, which is 15 days. We can't even get them to do it for 15 days. It's like, oh my gosh, I don't know. It just, it's a really frustrating thing. I mean, I know there are going to be women who don't do it. They bounce back, into their way, they go back to their lives and they feel great and they never have a burnout. It's like, okay, cool. Great. That's great. You're the minority though. Like, that is not what's happening for the majority of people. And so we can't be thinking that that's the goal. That's not the goal. The goal would be to rest and recover and eat and enjoy, so that we don't set ourselves up for these low thresholds and things like postpartum mental health and the way that that relates to postpartum anger. So
yes.
Thank you so much, Dr. Alice, for coming on and sharing your wisdom with us, your experience, and all of your helpful tips as well. And I'm going to put all of those ways that people can find and contact you in the show notes, so that they can continue to reach out and, you know, get additional help they need, or even just inspiration. Your Instagram account is really helpful as well. And just like, you know, informative, educational, all the things. So thank you for your time. I really appreciate you coming
on. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciated it.
There is a lot of education out there for pregnancy and birth, and thank goodness for it. But what about postpartum? Many parents feel blindsided by how dynamic and intense the first few weeks with a newborn can be, and I've created a course to change that. Introducing the Immediate Postpartum Series. In this 11-video course, I teach you and your partner about all of the different types of decisions that need to be made right after your baby is born, the ways that your body and your baby's body will be changing rapidly over those first several days and weeks, how to recover from birth, whether it's a vaginal or cesarean delivery, how to establish breastfeeding, it's basically a breastfeeding 101 course, and the nuances of stool changes, diaper tricks, newborn sleep, placenta options, mindset, circumcision, and more, so that you and your partner know what to expect and can feel prepared and confident in what is normal and what is not, and get back to enjoying your new baby. Click the link in the show notes to start prepping now. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.